Blog Talk Radio.
Another installment of Black News Network, DLR's Jewel Hour, being in. Again, today we have a special in-studio guest, Schoolem Chris Chris,
yeah.
To feature Conley.
Hey.
What it do, what it do. So we're just going to have some fun today. We have a couple things going on, but this show today has really been titled Legendary, because we're going to talk on some topics that are legendary topics. To be honest with you, the truth of the matter, we're going to talk on the Dungeon Family. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Dungeon Family, that hip-hop movement that happened in Atlanta in the mid-90s, late 80s. I can just talk about that all day, but we ain't getting into that yet. And later on, we'll talk about a hometown legend, a local icon and legend from where I grew up in Rovonia, Mr. James Gordon Sr. And we'll get into that later. But to start the show off today, First and foremost, I should put out here who I am. Derek Air Runner, the host of BLR's Jewel Hour. I don't even think I did that last time. Nobody even said.
No, you did.
Yeah, I did. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'll be slipping. I'll be trying to get into the show, you know, and get this thing popped. So I came across this article the other day on social media, and I thought it was quite interesting. And the article was actually titled, let me get into my notes. Well, I titled it Forgotten in Hip Hop, but the actual article is titled, here it is, 8 Forgotten Rappers Rotting in Jail. And the first rapper on the list, which some people may be familiar with, BG.
Juvenile,
Hot Boy.
I thought he'd been out of jail. I didn't know he was
actually
still in jail.
He went. He's had some trouble since their fame, back and forth, in and out of jail. I think he had some issues with heroin. I think he was a heroin addict. But recently, the last member of the Hot Boys watched his life go down the drain because he was arrested for gun possession and witnessing tampering. In 2012, he's currently serving 14 years in prison. And you ask, and I know a lot of people are like, how you get rich and famous and you go to jail, how you get caught up? But this is these guys' environment. This is what they came from. You know what I'm saying? Everybody ain't rapping about what they want to be. Some people really were these things they were talking about. So BG was the first on the list. I don't know, a lot of people know about BG. A lot of, might not know about Hot Boys back in the day when Cash Money first blowed up. BG was really instrumental in that drive. It was him, Juvenile, Lil Wayne, and Turk.
I seen BG in concert once. He came to Milwaukee and he performed the... he had like a popular song.
Yeah, BG did have his own club. What was it?
Something with like...
what was it?
That heartbeat or something. That beat. Something I can't remember. But he had like a big song out and he performed that, I remember.
BG was cool though. But the thing about BG for me was, that I really liked about BG was his cadence and his kind of twang, the way his delivery was. It was kind of different. It was slow and methodical kind of.
That's
why I liked it, BG. BG was cool. I mean, well, I'm talking to the dude. He's not deceased. He's just out of the mainstream for right now. But I mean, as a rapper, he has a great potential. We wish BG the best. Moving on, I don't know if you ever heard of this guy. I hadn't. I know you are my hip hop expert, so you probably know Max B.
Yeah, Max B. The way.
The way
Harlem rapper. Yeah.
Well, he was
part of the Diplomat.
Right. Yeah, I seen it. When I was reading on it, I seen it said the way your Harlem rapper was sentenced to 75 years in jail in 2009, stemming from a bevy of charges including armed robbery, kidnapping, aggravated assault, and felony murder.
Mm-hmm.
He did manage to appear on Kanye's new album, The Life of Pablo. I didn't know that. Did you know that?
Yeah.
And he hosted French Montana's newest mixtape. Praise God. I didn't know that. That's kind of tight.
I feel like a lot of rappers, they have their ties to still get heard out there. Like Gucci Man, I think.
Right.
That's amazing.
I didn't even know, and it's crazy because we're going to get to Gucci Man. I think he is number 8, but I didn't know Gucci Man was still in jail. I just assumed he was out because you still hear about him. He's kind of actively in the scene.
Yeah.
But I remember back in the day, you probably remember this too, when Puffy put out Shine, and then Shine took the weapons charge and was in prison for all that time. Shine was kind of still relative because he was still connections, was able to put out songs and stuff. But it seems once he got out, he couldn't really get nothing going.
Mm-hmm.
I think Shine was tight.
And then he became Jewish.
Yeah. All that other stuff happened. I thought Shine was tight though. I liked Shine too.
He was, yeah.
I mean, everybody was saying he sounded like Biggie, he was close to Biggie, but
he did have that dude voice when he started rapping.
Right. But and then when you seen Shine, you was like, that's who doing that?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But that was just me getting off topic, as always. Next rapper. Let's see who the next rapper is. Who we got here? C-Murder. Everybody I know is familiar with C-Murder, the brother of Master P, from the fame of No Limit Records, which is one of the best independent hip-hop labels ever.
Yeah.
I think what P did is phenomenal. I don't think he get a lot of credit he should for what he
did. Yeah, he really doesn't. I've seen a post where within 1 month, or in 1 year, he had out 27 different albums. Mm-hmm. But I was like, who does
this? Is the God honest truth. And if my homeboys out there listening, Duke Corbone, Moody, all my boys, we used to hang every Tuesday. We were at, what was it, Vinyl Fever? Vinyl Fever, I think, like Boogie Woogie back in the day was the music store. Every Tuesday we was there getting a No Limit record. Because back then, albums dropped on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Every Tuesday, No Limit was dropping an album. I'm talking about this went on for like 6-7 months. Every Tuesday, you
yeah.
Soldier Slim, Mystical. But we really was buying it because Mystical was featuring on all of them.
Yeah.
So we wanted a Mystical. But Beats by the Pound, which is we were totally off topic because he's probably been in jail. But Beats by the Pound was the people that, well, the production company that made the production group that made the beats
mm-hmm.
for No Limit. And they did all of it. That was a lot of work, too. And I think Manny Fresh don't get a lot of props. He should put out all the beats for Cash Money, too.
Yeah.
So that's just me getting shots out of everybody. But on speaking on C Murder, the brother Master P has always been synonymous with trouble. Then his name is C Murder. I mean, it did come off well when things started to go left again.
Right.
You know what I mean? In 2009, C Murder was sentenced to life after fatally killing a 16-year-old fan in 2012. I thought at one point C Murder was going to beat it. I think he did get out at one point, and then something happened. And he had to go back in.
I remember that, and then he went right back in. I know Master P said in the interview that they're working on doing like another appeal and
mm-hmm.
whatnot, working on that with him. But for the meantime, he's still in there.
Tim Hardy was good too. I mean, and then you can't really feel bad if he committed a crime, but you also see the kind of the quandary in it because you think about you had all this success. And now you have to spend your life in prison. Mm-hmm. You could have made better choices. It's hard. I guess I can say it's hard looking at it and trying to sympathize in it. But at the same time, consequences. I mean,
yeah.
It's consequences to everything. Of course, you know my boy had to make the list. Suge Knight. The infamous Suge, I mean, what is my boy doing? I mean, playing blind, playing crazy. Suge's trying to do everything he can to get out.
Come on,
man. He can stay in there. But Suge, you almost think it's kind of like karma, you know
yeah.
what I mean? You kind of think it's karma because Suge was known for being ruthless for years and being notorious for being a bully.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it's publicly known that he straight up took the rights to Ice Ice Baby from Vanilla Ice. It was even said, Vanilla Ice said, I seen in an interview, that he was supposedly hung over a railing in a high rise somewhere in L.A. and had to sign over the rights to. That's how a lot of people know that. That's how Suge got his money to start because he took the royalties and the rights to Ice Ice Baby.
Crazy.
And Ice Ice Baby is like a...
That was big. That came out on my birthday. That was the number one song on my birthday.
That song still can get somebody jumping to this day.
Right.
All
right,
stop. Collaborate and listen. Hey, I know that song. This is a funny thing, though. This is a story. Back in the day when we used to have nothing but radio, so you would have to listen to the radio. So I would record songs on the radio from my cassette player, and then I would play them back and write mm-hmm. down the words to it. And that's how I learned.
That's what I used to do. I used to be obsessed with B2K, and there was a rapper in the group, and I used to write down like all his raps. Just so that I could go back.
Right.
Oh, you don't know it. I know that. Like, and then spit it. Like.
Hey, I'm saying, man, we was innovative. We was innovative before technology just took over. So, if y'all think we slacking around here, we ain't. Let's see who we got now. Bobby Sherman. We was talking about Bobby Sherman earlier. Bobby Sherman, the young spitter, was arrested back in 2014 and charged with criminal possession of a weapon. He's currently facing a possible 8 to 25 years in jail.
Yeah.
So Sherman had been in jail for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So once that song came out, he really kind of...
He went right in. Like,
yeah,
he
wow.
went right in. He had a second single that came out, but he was already headed into jail, so it didn't get as much
right.
publicity.
Couldn't
yeah, because yeah, it was a good song, but it was just like, oh, it didn't get as much publicity because he was in jail. Everybody was focused on that, and it was just like, oh, he's going to get out. Oh, never mind. Like, something else. Because
I knew
up
one time they were saying, like, they was going to let him out, and then next thing I knew, it was like, I don't know if he had done something or something came up.
No, he didn't do anything. He just—they tried to appeal, and they were saying that he was gonna get out, but then something else came up in the in the case, and like they were.
And
like,
I know the judge or something is really not fun.
Yeah, he does not like him for whatever reason. So.
Then the song may not help either. Yeah. Right? And just being honest, I mean the beat is cold, but the lyrics, when you really pay attention to what he's saying. We got True Life. You ever heard of True Life?
Mm-hmm.
The rapper who was first signed to Rockefeller. It's not saying Rockefeller, it's saying Rock La Familia. I never heard of that.
Oh, Rock Familia. That's a part of Rockefeller.
By Jay-Z, watched his career come to a screeching halt when he was arrested for stabbing two men in the lobby of a Manhattan building in 2009. So this must be when Jay-Z and that stabbing went on with, no, because Jay-Z was charged with that. I thought with, Undias? This was a while back when Jay was in trouble for supposed to be stabbing this guy that was a big time producer.
Mm.
But Jay beat the case. He was slapped with first degree manslaughter and sentenced to 8 years in prison. His parole hearing was last month, so he may be getting out soon.
Yeah.
I guess this guy had a big upside coming True Life. He was with Rockefeller back in the day, which Rockefeller still exists, but it's not the Rockefeller he knew at the time, because I think in 2009, still Dame Dash, Big, and Jay them putting it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now Jay is left and went to Def Jam. And another thing is totally different, but and we can get in that another day. The Dame Dash Jay Z thing.
Yeah.
I really like that conversation. I like that conversation because I think it's interesting how the two dynamics play themselves out. You know what I mean? Because both ways, you can make an argument for Jay doing the way he did it. You can also make an argument for Dame being the shrewd businessman he is from the streets. So, I mean, it can go both ways. At the end of the day, like I said, always say it's an open perspective platform. So I'm gonna be an open dude on everything. I hope I'm not too open sometimes. Let's see what we got next. G Dep.
Mm-hmm, I don't know who that is.
It says 2010, the former Bad Boy signing took himself.
Oh, he signed
a
Bad Boy, but didn't.
Everybody, Bad Boys. I ain't gonna say that right now. But it just seems like. The only person that we can say to this day that had an upside with Bad Boy was Biggie. And the only reason you can still say that is because Biggie's career was cut short.
Yeah.
Anybody else that was signed to Bad Boy, career doesn't last that long on Bad Boy.
Other than Diddy.
Right. Right. I don't know. You got Black Rob, you got Craig Mack. Craig Mack came out with one of the hardest songs ever and just disappeared.
With Biggie, yeah.
And just disappeared. And Biggie just kind of took over the label. But I don't know. 112. All right, I can go on. I ain't gonna do him like that. Making the band. I ain't gonna do him. Vanity's. What's the girl's group?
Danity.
I ain't gonna do Diddy like that. Sorry, Diddy. I apologize. Bad Boy Sonny took himself into, in 2010, the former Bad Boy Sonny took himself into a local police station and admitted to murdering a man back in 1993. Sounds like my boy has some issues. This resulted in Depp being locked up in 2011. He's currently undergoing a 15-year sentence. I wasn't really familiar with him. And maybe that's why. Yeah, killed somebody prior. Gucci Mane. Last but not least, Gucci Mane. I did not know Gucci Mane was in jail. I swear I thought he had got out. I really did.
Gucci Mane been in jail, I think,
for
at least my senior year in high school.
2014,
I'm saying? 2014. He's been
in
and out.
Yeah. But I guess this has been the longevity of the stint.
Yeah.
I remember Gucci Mane going to jail a while ago when he first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought he was out. And then maybe I thought he was just out and didn't know he had went back. Anyway. That's the eight forgotten rappers that in hip hop that's rotting away in jail. You hate to see this kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think Boosie's the only one that survived that one.
Boosie just came out.
Yeah,
is it true? I seen it on social media. You would know more than me. Is it true that that Boosie is fighting cancer? Or is that was Boosie? It's not, so it is true.
No, it's true. He had surgery and like they got it out. I don't know if it was lung or kidney or. I don't think it was either lung or kidney. I can't remember, but he had surgery and right now he's just kind of living life like this. He's cancer free right now, but Yeah, he was trying to battle cancer. They did a whole documentary and whatnot on him.
I gotta check that out. I like Boosie. I really do like Boosie. I mean, I really wasn't familiar with Boosie because I think Boosie must have came out when I was in Iraq. And when I came back, everybody was playing Boosie. And, it sounded so local. Like, even though, I mean, I'm from Florida and it was from Louisiana, it just sounded like the local artist when you first heard it. It didn't seem like big production, which is, I mean, I guess it wasn't in some, I guess it was relatable. That's what I probably said.
Yeah,
it was so relatable. And I think that's what made Boosie so big. Because I remember, and this is crazy, Melvin, your brother coming here, Lil Melvin coming here, and he was talking about Boosie, and it throwed me off. Because I'm thinking, like, you live in Milwaukee, because most of the time the artists don't spread like that,
Boosie,
especially with Boosie.
Like, the love Milwaukee has for Boosie is
yeah, I didn't know that.
It's crazy. Well, he used to, when he was first getting started in rap, like, he would come up to Milwaukee, and he would, like, do his little drug stuff and whatnot in Milwaukee, but then he would, like, do his music side hustle, and I guess, like, we supported him in that way. He would shoot out, like, he would shout out Milwaukee and, like, his songs and whatnot, so we just, like, embraced Boosie, and we loved him, and, like, whenever I hear a Boosie song, I turn into a different person.
Yeah, everybody does. I think everybody does, and that's the truth. I've noticed that. I'll never forget at my best friend wedding, they played, I'm on.
Yeah.
I'm on.
Yeah.
Oh, man. You're talking about this clean cut, prestigious wedding up until this song come on. My boy just went loose. His wife went loose. The priest almost looked like he was finna get loose. I said, what is this? But at that moment, I fell in love with Boosie because I'm the type of person, if something can move people, that's what I'm about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Boosie does. His music kind of just relates to everybody.
Yeah.
And then his delivery, I mean, because his voice, Boosie, bad ass.
Yeah,
my fault. Hey, man, we having fun. We doing what we do, man. Well, that's the wrap up of the Forgotten in Hip Hop. We're going to some sound. As I said, the day is legendary. So all the music is going to be pretty much an ode to something that's legendary. And we'll start this thing off because we're coming back with the Dungeon Family. We'll start this thing off with one of the greatest hits put out by the Dungeon Family and that group. One of the best groups of all, no, the best rap group of all time. I said it. I'm saying it here and I'm going to continue to say it. The best rap group of all time, Outkast. Check this out.
Man, let me hear that, man. All right. You going to pad that?
Man, this thing was so sick. Low ride. 77 Seville, L Dog, nothing but them blacks, all the players, all the hustlers. I'm talking about a black man heaven here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's beginning to look a lot like wood. Follow my every step. Take notes on how I prep. I'm about to go in depth. This is the way I creep my season. Here's my guess to rep. I kept, to say the least, no, it can't see. So I begin to piece my two and two together. Got some snowy weather. Have to find something to do. I set the trap, so shut up that. Nonsense about some solid night. I got the crock, if it ain't real, ain't right. I'm like, no matter what the season, forever chill with Smith. I sit my fifth, I chill with Weston, got my reason. So tell me, what did you expect? You thought I'd break my neck to help y'all deck the hall? Oh no, I got other means of celebrating. I'm getting blizzard at hotel, I got the hoochie waiting. I made it through another year, can't ask for nothing much more. It's Outkast for the boots, I thought you knew, so now you know, let's go.
All the plans came from far and wide. box. Don't play me like I'm smoking rocks. I got the munchies. We got the Mary Jane in the dungeon. Just to let you know, in 93, that's how we coming. So ho, 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 check my King ass bro. The gin and juice has got me tipsy, so won't
it? If you'll give me 10 and I'll serve you then, now we've been. The corner in my Cadillac, my heart does not go 50 fat for no rat. I'm leaning back, my elbows out the window. Coke, rum, and endo fills my body. Where's the party? We rode deep, we dipped to underground. Sees a lot of hoes around. I spit my game while waiting countdown. I fight for 1, 3, 2, here comes the one. A new year has begun, be funk squawk another one.
Hey, so we were chopping up on something else, Black Lives Matter. But we made it back in time. Me and Chris get back in that in a minute. Right off the cuff, this is going to be very, this is going to be fun for me. I'm going to be honest. I grew up on this music. This music to this day still gets me hype. But like Chris said, she turned into a different person when she hit Boosted Badass. You give me some Dre 3000, Outkast, Goody Mob, Big Group. You give me any of that back in the day. Liberation is one of my favorite songs to this day. Dungeon Family. We actually, me and Chris actually had the privilege of watching The Art of Organized Noise, the documentary that's on Netflix. If you haven't seen it and you're a hip hop head, please check it out. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal documentary. I mean, you get to see the ins and the outs of how everything went down, and you also get to see a family. That's what I took from it. It was a family, it was a brotherhood, and it was shared. Like, what I took more of it was, because you got these three producers that put together the sound. Sleepy Brown, Ray Murray, am I correct? And is Ray Murray?
I just remember Rico and Sleepy Brown.
It's Rico, and I think Ray the one did the beats, remember? Because when they was out doing their thing, he was the only. Right.
Yeah.
And then Ray came from an actual, his parents were musically talented, and they had done their own thing. So he was very, very intricate in the beats and the sounds of Organized Noise and the upcoming of the Dungeon Family and the movement in Atlanta on Head Low and DeLow. What is it? Heaven and DeLow. It's in the song Outkast. You know what I'm talking about.
Street?
Yeah, what is it called? It's Heaven and DeLow. I think that's what it say. Heaven and DeLow. I'm going to look it up. I don't know how I forget that verse and I'm supposed to be an Outkast head. Don't charge it to me. But anyway, in watching the documentary, we really see the ends, and it was really candid. I mean, it was honest and true. You really got to go back to the house.
Yeah, like what I really liked about the documentary is how they had so many different people talk about this one topic, and they all matched up.
Right.
There was nothing that was not misplaced or nothing that was forgotten. Everyone said the exact same words, and they weren't in the same room together. Like, these were different individual interviews, but on this one topic, they would say the exact same thing. It was just that I thought that was crazy, because when you usually watch documentaries like that, someone's words don't really match up, or they had different feelings about everyone felt the same and thought the same, and they experienced the same thing, so all their answers came out to be the same. So I thought that was great. I like that.
And it was crazy, because when you look at it, it wasn't just inside the members of the Dungeon Family. You can go all the way to L.A. Reid and Pebbles, Diddy,
Ludacris.
Everybody was saying the same thing. That's how much this was embraced, this movement, and understanding of what these boys was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Rico, I didn't know how instrumental Rico was of the Dungeon Family. He was kind of like the head and the brain behind the whole operation. I didn't know that. I didn't really even know Sleepy Brown. The only reason I knew Sleepy Brown was a part of that whole movement was after years later when he came out with the Outkast, the way he moved and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, kind of like label movement.
Yeah, I didn't know he was producing them and all that back in the day.
Yeah, I didn't know that neither. I thought he was just like a member part
of the
group. I just
one of the boys that could
like Nate Dogg kind of like.
And they turned him on. Yeah. I didn't know that. But to their credit, these boys from probably 90 to the mid-2000s kind of just dominated the airstream with music and hip-hop coming out of Atlanta. They could honestly be credited with hip-hop building so big and being so prevalent in Atlanta.
Yeah, having their own genre. I know I had the pleasure of meeting KP from Parental Advisory, and he's from
the first group, right?
Yeah, he was the first group from the Dungeon Family to be like the guinea pig of like getting signed to LaFace and whatnot, but like what got them that three in that group divided up and like they brought in Outkast was that Pebbles and LA Reed was like, oh, you know you do this, you know you do A&R, you know you were a producer, like these are the things that you're doing, but you don't see that you're doing it. And so like they kind of got more into the business side, and then that's when they started bringing in like CeeLo and Goody Mob and Gip and Outkast, and everyone started coming in, and they got signed, and then they kind of built up.
Right.
But yeah, I thought like the stories he was telling us before that came out went right along with the movie.
Right.
So I was just like, wow, that's amazing, and just to even have that chance to like speak with him and see him and like give his testimony was great.
The boys, I mean, what they did, and the most respect I have for it, well, the respect that I have for it, and mostly it's because they came from the understanding of we all going to do this together.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, it doesn't matter. We're going to do it. I'm not trying to take from you. You're not trying to take me. We just going to eat. You know what I'm saying? Because even to this day, Rico has, and I won't get too much into the documentary because I want people to see it, but it's kind of like he has some kind of issues because of the way things played out in the end.
Yeah.
And because of his, and it's crazy because he had all the control.
Yeah.
And he was so loyal. He felt like he was being unloyal to when things all played out and everybody blew up. Because, like, people don't know, like Rico was saying, like, he the one went to LaFace and fought for Outkast.
Mm-hmm.
And L.A. Reid even said he didn't want to sign Outkast.
Right, because L.A. Reid, like, LaFace had a specific genre.
Right.
It was R&B.
Right,
so to bring
exactly.
in, like, Outkast, was just like,
Right, exactly.
Like, LaFace. L.A. Reid wasn't trying to mess with him at all. But, like you said, Rico went and kept fighting.
I mean, you see Outkast, and today Outkast is, and I didn't know this, but Outkast is the only hip-hop album ever to sell a dime and win a Grammy. And when I say a dime, I mean 10-time platinum.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's 10 million platinum records. I mean, 10 million records they sold, which is, that is crazy. I didn't know they sold it.
That was a good album, though, because it was like two albums in one.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm going to be honest, I don't want to say this, but I have to be honest, because that's what I do. I'm just going to be honest. Stank Onia is probably my least liked album by Outkast, but even with Stank Onia, I still like Songs Doing It. Now, outside of that one, I can listen to every song on every Outkast album ever put out.
Yeah.
To me, Outkast, what they did and how they did it, because they totally went against the grain.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, nobody had seen a group like that. Then you got Dre, you know what I mean? When they first came out, they were kind of ordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, to the means of what ordinary is.
Yeah.
As time started to evolve, by the time they got to AT Aliens, they were aliens.
Yeah. They were not. Of this planet.
But, you know what I'm saying? But for me, it was what made them unique.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Made them unique. I think Big Boy, on the other hand, don't get a lot of credit either. And it's hard when you're sitting next to a Dre 3000 to get a lot of credit. Big Boy is nice.
Big Boy he's smart too, because Big Boy, he's a part of this other group called Fantogram.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he's seen this girl that could sing, and I think it was like at Coachella, and like he just talked to her, and then they started doing work together,
mm-hmm.
and then now they're a group. So whenever, if you want to see Big Boy, you're gonna see her now, because now they're a group together and they tour together and whatnot.
That's tight. See, he's understood the marketing and how to put his stuff out there, which is what you could say for CeeLo too. because, and I didn't know CeeLo had such a horrid background as far as criminal wise before he came on to be. But CeeLo is very talented. I mean, his career has proven that. But Goody Mob, for me, CeeLo was the mainstream of Goody Mob at the time because it was like you looked for CeeLo. But the Guilt was serious. I mean, Cujo, all the boys was nice.
Yeah.
And what they were talking about at that time, which is crazy to today because when I sit back and I listen to it today, it was dead on.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I really understood it. I just liked the beat and I kind of, something related to me, but I don't know if I really got it because it was revolutionary type stuff they was talking about.
Yeah.
These boys was young. Then when you see the atmosphere and the actual environment that they came from and when they was putting together all this art at, it ain't number two art. I mean, to be in a, this was a dungeon. They're not lying when they say dungeon family.
How they were describing it.
It wasn't even a basement. I thought it was a basement for real. It wasn't finished. It was just a, what would you
dirt
call it?
Ball.
Yeah, like a
cave.
A place under the house where you go. But they put out good music, and I mean, much credit to the Dungeon Family. I didn't know the whole ins and outs of how things went down, so I thought the documentary was very well done. It was done by Quincy Jones III, which is a good thing. I think he put out a lot of documentaries, you know what I mean? And I've seen some that haven't been so good. I've seen some that have. This, for me, is the best documentary. I really, hip-hop-wise, I've seen in them. I don't know if I can say if I've seen one better, to be honest with you. Unless you can consider That Hit a documentary. If you consider That Hit a documentary.
You mean This
Is It? Yeah, This Is It. If you consider This Is It a documentary.
No, that's not really a documentary. That's like part of his life. Like, that wasn't really... It was supposed to be about the tour. I don't think
And then because unfortunately he passed, it came something different. But but I mean, at the same time, I'm grateful for that because you got to see an inside of Michael that I didn't know that well.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he was a genius when it came to music, but I didn't know he was that hands on with his music.
Yeah.
And we off on another topic. Yeah, but we're talking about legends, so it fits.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna talk about legends, you gotta talk about Michael Jackson. You just have to throw him in there. But for the Dungeon Family, when you say this, you're talking about three friends that grew up and put together something and decided to put their homeboys on, everybody in the surrounding area of Atlanta on. And I think that's something we should really try to do today, in today's time. Because the one thing that we did see that separated them in the end was money.
Mm-hmm.
Once they started making money, everybody started going in different directions and then started getting crazy. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's how it is. That's just
business. When it comes to business, like it's hard to take your feelings out of it when you've grown up with these people and you started it with these people. Now everyone's starting to go their separate ways because of money and business. And it's just like, do you want to keep going with the money or do you want to just, you know, go back to how it was?
Right. Because they were saying like there was a time when they was getting like $3,000 and they thought they was doing something. You getting chicken, we going shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And it went to them having I think he said he had a $20 million budget or something like that.
Their first deal with Jimmy Iovine was $20
million. Yeah, I think he said he left $17
million
on the table.
Yeah.
Man, that's a lot of money, man. That speaks to the craft, though. That speaks to them putting out good music and doing great things. And then you got to remember, they were doing all the, and then another thing that I didn't know, these were real instruments being played.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't no made-up beat computer technology.
Right.
These were live instruments on these albums. So when you hear Liberation, you hear that guitar, you hear that drum, that's somebody in there playing, which is wild, man.
You don't get that anymore.
I know, it's so authentic. I just loved it. If you're talking about organic, true soul music, and when I say soul music, because we use the thing, you say soul music, it has to be blues or it has to be a gospel song.
Mm-hmm.
Soul music is music that comes from the soul.
Mm-hmm.
I think of the Dungeon Family. I think of CeeLo. I think of Goody Mob. I think of Outkast. I think of, what was the other artist that they had that I didn't know? CeeLo. I think it was, CeeLo. And I don't know if you're familiar with CeeLo, but his music is kind of like that. I mean, it's a mix between the South and that gospel. It kind of, it's a flow to it. I remember growing up when I was in Louisiana, I was stationed in Louisiana at the time, and my homeboy, he loved CeeLo. And I had never heard of him before, and that's all we rode around listening to. So, I mean, music is music. But the Dungeon Family has put a staple on music that I don't think can be overwritten, underwritten.
Yeah.
You can't do nothing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And for Atlanta, they should be very proud because Atlanta right now is one of the most popping places in hip-hop. And I think a lot of it is owed to these boys. Because at that time, I mean, before that, it was either New York or California. It's just the truth. And it could be a lot of reason why a lot of people migrated, and not, maybe not a good word, bad choice word, but migrated is not bad. I mean, in general sense, migrated to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the black culture around late 90s, mid-90s, everybody decided we going to Atlanta.
Yeah, and there's, you know, all the HBCUs.
Right.
HBCUs down there, and yeah, so it's thriving with, like, black culture, and so that was big. That
I like Atlanta. I think if I could go back into my 20s and college, early college days, when I really wasn't doing nothing in college days, so I would have a lot of fun. There's two places that I would probably really thrive in and enjoy. The first is D.C. I love D.C. I just love the aura of D.C. because it's almost as if it's a dainty kind of dapper. You don't see the hood. You see more of a gentleman kind of playoff and a lady. It's more of a sophisticated kind of educational vibe in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
But it still has that hip-hop thrive to it, like Wale.
Because
he's from that area, you know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? Wale, you get them kind of. And Atlanta. And the reason, because Atlanta's just jumping. I mean, let's be real. It's just jumping.
Yeah, they create, you know what I mean? The dances that come out.
Yeah, it's just jumping. It is. Back in the day, we thought Miami was the spot. And it was Miami, New York, and California. I was scared of Miami because back then it wasn't no First 48. You just would hear stories about Miami. You know what I mean? So nobody wanted to go to Miami. And then California was too far and New York was too cold. So it was just like, these things were happening.
Yeah.
So it's different now. So, I mean, Chris, you got anything else from Dungeon Family? Or?
No, I don't.
Great. Dungeon Family, man, hey, go check it out. Like I said, it's on Netflix now. If you have Netflix or your friend got Netflix or you can get somebody cold to get in Netflix. Go check it out. It's the Art of Organized North, and it's the whole story on the Dungeon Family. Good Amar, Outkast. What's the other group you were telling me about?
Parental Advisory,
L.A. Reid.
Mm-hmm.
Even, and this is something I'm throwing out there for you. For you, if you didn't know, you'll find out on that, but it's a spoiler. If you didn't know, I did not know, so I have to say this, that Diddy did Players Ball video. He directed Players Ball video.
Yeah.
I did not know that for Outkast. I didn't know that. I didn't even know Diddy was directing videos back then.
I thought he was just doing his own. I didn't know he would go out
and
do
it. Yeah, I was like, who was going to hire Diddy? But I guess. And it worked. It really did work. So, big ups to Diddy for that. And wait till you see him on there. He's a character. So, I'll go into some sounds and we'll be back. We'll do the hometown hero, the hometown legend tribute. Check this out. This is a great, 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 one of the great songs. Check out this beat, though. I don't know if I ever paid attention how cold this beat is until I was listening to it in a documentary the other day. Check this out and tell me what you think. This is, once again, the Dungeon Family.
Complex. A gate with the serial code was put up in. They claim that this community is so drug free, but it don't look that way to me, cause I can see the young bloods hanging out at the store 24/7, drunkies looking for a hit of the blow. It's powerful. Oh, you know what else they trying to do? Make a curfew, especially for me and you. The traces of the new world order. Time is getting shorter. If we don't get prepared, people, it's gonna be a soda. My mind won't allow me to not be curious. My folks don't understand, so they don't take it serious. But every now and then, I wonder if the gate was put up to keep crime out of keep eye.
Listen up, little nigga. I'm talking to you about what your little ass need to be going through. I fall a victim too, and I know I shouldn't smoke so much, but I do. With the crew every day, on the average by 4 or 5. I'm lucky to be alive and surprised. I won't realize the cost after I lost my best friend Bean. I recognize as a king. Who am I to tell you to stop smoking? Now you open to disease and cold, and ain't 16 years old. This has got to stop. Let's take a walk through detox. I won't out of this hole. I'm in the cell under attack. Look up, folks, stay in the hood. Got an eye on every move I make. Open your face to info. You ain't know, cause it's kept low. How the new world plan reach the planet without the
so
man.
So what's your aim? Try to separate me from the blood of disrespect, like coming in my home and not wiping your feet on the rug. The citron absolute has got me bucking no hand with no phone. Look out for the man with the mask and the white pony on my back of pills. Staying off my toes, always on my heels, the same plane. Soldiers coming in the dark, my plane to report the new system by rain. Tag my skin with your computer chip. Run your hand over the scanner to buy your dish now. No more fishing for your fish.
No more fishing for my fish.
Of the old days, pathways gone, mind blown, perception, protection. My name on your selection, but I don't.
Yes, sir. Cell Therapy by Good & Mob. One of the great groups. Good & Mob is a great group, too. But as I said, the greatest rap group ever is Outkast. Out of Dungeon Family. So Dungeon Family, at least they got one group. I mean, they got two of the best groups ever. And the greatest ever, for me, is Outkast. Cell Therapy, that beat is cold.
Mm-hmm.
That beat is cold. And they say Rico did that by himself, which is tight. That's tight.
Yeah.
Tight work. It's tight work. We'll get into a hometown legend, icon, Mr. James Gordon Sr. Mr. James Gordon Sr. came to Florida. Well, he grew up. He actually grew up in Ocala, Florida. This is very close to me because my grandmother's from Ocala, Florida, and they knew each other prior to moving to Livonia, where I grew up at. And he became an icon and legend at the age of 4. He started working in the fields in Ocala, picking peanuts in Ocala. And a lot of people say Ocala, but it's really Fairfield. But Ocala is now the name, but the area where they were from is called Fairfield, Florida. But now if you go out, there's nothing there. There's really nothing there anymore. And he grew up there, and by the time he was 18, he moved to Livonia. At that time, the area was East Terracea. It was called East Terracea because Mr. Meade Smith, his father, Robert Smith, owned the land, and they wanted to give an area to the minorities to have their own place to stay or a place to be. And it was separation, basically, back at that time, because we're talking, if Mr. James, it was, had to be 40s, 30s, 20, like 1929, 1930, somewhere in that area. So it was real early in this time when he came to Livonia, and it was East Terracea at the time. Well, because the mail was getting mixed up for East Terracea and regular Terracea, they had to give a name to this area that they had given to this the predominantly minorities that they were giving it to, which was, at this time, it was nothing but blacks and Hispanics. It really was more blacks, and it was the blacks' choice later on to allow the Hispanics to join in the area, but it was given to the blacks to stay and kind of have their own area to you know, congregate and do, and to live, basically.
Yeah.
So when Mr. Smith, his son, went off to school and got educated and thing, and Mr. Meade Smith took over this area, and his father took over the whole Tennessee area. So Meade, the son, was over this part. He became great friends with Mr. James. Mm-hmm. When Mr. James came in, and Mr. James was 18 in 1939 when he came to Roebourne, and they had to give it a name. And so because the mail was getting mixed up, he picked a name. Mr. Meade Smith just kind of picked a random name that was on a list, and it happened to be Roebourne. So that's how Roebourne became to be named Roebourne.
Oh, okay.
So he
wow.
just picked a name because they couldn't keep calling it East Terracea because it was, the mail was getting mixed up with Terracea,
mm-hmm.
which is still a part of, well, outside part of, well, outside development outside of Roebourne.
Mm-hmm.
That's right there, and they're really connected, but Roebourne has its own entity now. Mr. James came in, by the time he turned 26, 27, he was able to own his own with a $500 down payment gas station. By 1960, he had paid that off and owned the gas station, what we now know as Gordon Servicing Garage, right there in the front of Roebourne. From that time until maybe a month ago, every day he opened up that gas station. Every day. And years ago, next to it, it's now, which is, it's apartments, but it used to be a laundromat for the community. Mr. James owned that also, and that was the community laundromat at the time. Then, as time transpired, it became a game room for the kids. These are all the things that Mr. James Gordon was able to do inside this community of Roebourne, which gave him the name that's been known for years, the mayor of Roebourne, because he came in at a time, and because he made a friendship with Mr. Meade Smith, he was able to accumulate a lot of land. And in accumulating his land, and I've learned this over the years, he was instrumental into my grandfather being able to get the things he got done in Roebourne, because they knew each other prior in Ocala. So when Mr. James got established in Roebourne, he sent for my grandfather. My grandfather came, and he became the foreman of the laboring of the fields and stuff like that for the people of Roebourne. So they employed the people of Roebourne, which allowed my grandfather to be in a position to own property as well, because
mm-hmm.
he, you know, just a share. It was Black Wall Street, really, honestly, it was at that time. And it was in an area where Mr. James was smart enough to make the moves he needed to with the right people at a time
right.
where it was really hard and probably looked down upon for him, because even for myself, having conversations with Mr. James in recent years and talking to him, for a lot of years, he took a lot of backlash for being, quote unquote, the man's homeboy.
Okay.
You know what I'm
yeah.
saying? But really what he was doing was cultivating a culture in Roebourne to make sure they had something. Because at that time, you're talking about in segregation, downright in the depths of the South, where if you didn't have this, what would it have?
Right.
You know what I mean? So he had to make means with what he had. And inside of doing that, he established what we now know of as Roebourne, the city of Roebourne. And he, for years, Mr. James recently passed on yesterday, which is unfortunate for our city, for our community, and for his family, after 95 years. He came
wow.
to Roebourne when he was 18 years old. And from that point until, like I say, and this is the God honest truth, until a couple of months ago, every day he got up and opened up that station. Every day. That was a constant in the community of Roebourne. And he was instrumental in getting the street lights, because it was a time where the street lights, the people of Roebourne couldn't make it, they didn't have enough money to get the lights on. Mr. James was able to make a deal with Mr. Meade Smith, to be able to get the street lights back on. A lot of the property and all that stuff in Roebourne was given to Mr. James from Mr. Meade, as long as Mr. James ran. And what happened was, over the years, Mr. Meade Smith was over the community, but he put Mr. James in charge.
Mm-hmm.
So Mr. James kind of took care of everything and reported back to Meade Smith. Once Mr. Meade Smith died, Mr. James inherited all of it, which put him in the position where everyone was
yeah,
saying he was the mayor. But
yeah.
even inside of that, once the man was gone, he became more instrumental to the people of the community because it wasn't no more over him anymore. So you're right. Because I know for a fact, Mr. James has plenty of properties in Rebunny to this day where I don't think he was even taking rent from people for years. You know what I mean? They were just living in it because he was at a position where he didn't need it and he wasn't going to push it. He was instrumental in the Mardi Gras. It used to be a time when the Mardi Gras would go on and we're going in. And the pink Cadillac is still on the side of his house to this day. He would ride through his pink Cadillac. Mr. James for me is probably the culmination of me understanding what it takes to be a leader and to lead your people. Because what I understand when I look back and I was doing some research and just checking up on the things I did know about Mr. James for myself and just historically, it was some bad, rough times for him. Because as a leader, and especially when you lead, and we know this, and I talked on it in a long forever, and when we talk about this crab in the bucket thing, and when you're dealing with the culture that we come from, a lot of time when you're a leader, the same people that you're leading will be the ones that are hard on you. And he caught a lot of that at a time because people didn't understand where he was going and what he was trying to do. And a lot of it came from the fact that he understood that he had to sit down with the Caucasians or the white man to get the black culture in a better establishment. So he was looked at as a baton at times, but he took all of that. And he took all of that and he sacrificed it to be the man he is to the day that he left us. And all the things that we have is because he sacrificed what he had for his community. And for me, that is the epitome of a leader. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even when you don't get it, I get it. And when I'm not here, even if I am here, but when I'm not here, more important, you'll understand what I gave so you can have today. And for me, that inspires me. That inspires me. If I can be half of what Mr. James was for Rebellion, and I'm trying to do things in Rebellion, but I can't do half of what he did. And if I can get to half of it, it would mean so much to me. I really appreciate Mr. James. I'll tell you this story, and then I'll close it up because I think I'm getting kind of caught up. I seen Mr. James. This was the last conversation I had with him. And then he took sick not too long ago. But the last conversation I had with him, we had got everything situated and we was going to do the farmer's market and the historical Rebellion farmer's market. And I had to make sure, because he owns the property that's on one side of the Bayshore Road. So if we were going to set up, I had to make sure he was okay with it. And I had to make sure, you know, the other owners were okay with the other side. So I went to the gas station. He was in the gas station. And I had the flyers and I was passing them out. I showed it to him. And he said, "So what's this here?" And I said, "Oh, Mr. James, this is a farmer's market. I'm trying to do something in the community, you know, to build the community and get us back together and get us rejuvenated." He said, "Well, if you're doing something good, I'm with you." I said, "Okay, Mr. James, I appreciate that." He said, "Now, ain't you Agnes and John grandson?" I said, "Yes, sir, Mr. James." I said, "I didn't know you knew who I was." He said, "Oh, yeah, I knew who you was." He said, "Your grandma and granddaddy was married on Calvary." So we went to this long story. He was telling me about it. It was married at Mount Calvary up on the hill in Ocala, and it was the only church up on the hill. And he was telling me this. Now, granted, Mr. James was 94 years old when we was having this conversation. Mm-hmm. But this is how sharp his memory was still at this time. He remembered who I was. He also remembered that who my grandparents was and when they were married. Mm-hmm. We're talking about over 60, 70 years ago his mind was going back to, and he was telling me this. So I got ready to go, and I said, "Well, thank you, Mr. James. I'm finna go." He said, "Well, do you want something to drink?" I said, "No, Mr. James, I'm good." I'll never forget it. I said, "I'm good." He said, "Stay that way. That's the best way to be." And that was the last thing Mr. James ever said to me. And if it's the least and it's the last thing I ever do, I'm going to take that with me. I'm going to try to be good and do what I can for the community. And on behalf of the community of Rebellion, on behalf of my family, on behalf of everyone that was encountered by Mr. James, thank you. Thank you, Mr. James. You are an iconic figure. You will live forever in the hearts and the minds and the souls of the people of Rebellion. We are Rebellion because of you. There's no more I can say to that. There's no more I can say to that. So with that, we'll close out today's show. I don't know. I'm caught up. We'll close out today's show. We'll check you guys. I'll see you guys Tuesday, man. Chris probably won't be here with me. I'll be by myself again. Appreciate you, Chris. Appreciate you hanging with me and chopping up with me. You got any closing words?
Thanks for having me. I had lots of fun.
Show, you know how we do. You know how we do. With that, I'm going to close this out with a Dungeon Family hit that probably you never heard of or knew that they did. Check this out. And I'll see you guys Tuesday. But I will say this. Lock your doors and open your hearts to the Lord. It's hard, but it's fair. One love, JWJ, Dad, and Chris. Out.
The rest is up to me.